Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining in on this week's episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. I hope everyone is having a great week. I want to start off by giving a huge congratulations to my cousin Caitlin, her husband Jervon, for welcoming their daughter into this world last week. I had the privilege of being in the hospital when she was born, and I got to see her in her first few hours of life. And Kate and Jervon, if you're listening, hopefully you're able to get a little bit of rest here and there, but I want you to know your daughter's so beautiful and so loved, and I'm thankful that I get to be an uncle to her. I'm really excited for the both of you, and also to my uncle Yeti, my auntie Kathy, becoming new grandparents. Congratulations to you guys. Such an exciting season for your family. If you're listening, you probably last week got to hear me and my wife sit down for a conversation. That was exciting to have her here as a returning guest. But this week, I am excited to announce we have a first-time guest on the show. He is someone who I've known not too long, honestly, close to a year now. But he has become someone who's very important to the Katina family and has gotten to know a lot of us at different levels, and just spending time with him and around him has been a treat, and I think our audience is really going to be blessed by him being on the show today. So I'd like to welcome Mr. Andrew Christensen. Andrew, thank you for being here, bro.
Well, that's quite the introduction. I appreciate it.
I'm excited. I have to apologize to you. I already have, but we've scheduled this once before and I had to bail on you because I scheduled it on the day of my cousin's wedding.
You kind of got to be there.
Yeah. And so that was totally my fault. And I'm thankful that you're gracious enough to still come by. And as we get started, I just want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to our audience. If you wouldn't mind, just share who you are, where you're from, whatever you think is important about you, and then also kind of what your connection is to the Katina family.
Well, thank you, first of all, once again, just for having me on the show. I'm super excited to be here. So, like you said, I'm Andrew, and I come from Oregon. I'm a little far from here. I'm 26 years old, and I'll tell you, just being here in Tennessee, I just really have loved it. Just the community, the weather. I get a lot more sunshine over here compared to Oregon. But I'll tell you, I would not be here without the Lord. God really brought me here. And I love to step in the lives of students. I've been in youth ministry for a good solid part of my life. I want to say probably close to 10 years of my life. I've been connected with ministry. And how I got over here was there's a guy named Jeremy Williams, which y'all have met him before, or heard from him before.
Guest of the show.
Yeah. And he, pretty typical. He's one of those guys where he's always like the come and see.
Yeah.
You know, he's always somebody who's going to be kind of tapping your shoulder and saying, hey, like, what do you think about this? And so back in 2021, again, it's a total God story. Back in 2021, the church that I was going to, we had a men's retreat. This is right in the middle of COVID and everything. And so we are trying to start this new retreat to try and get some momentum back with the men's ministry. Okay. And so Jeremy but he came and visited to Oregon because we had asked him to come speak at this retreat. He used to work at Sam Alliance Church, the church that I went to in Salem, Oregon. And he said, sure, I'd love to. So he flew out here to Salem, or flew out here. Technically, the retreat was out on the coast, the Oregon coast. But he spoke at this retreat. And we crossed paths at this retreat, and he asked me, hey, what do you think about moving to Tennessee? And I said, no. And he said, well, like, at least pray about it, right? And I said, I'll pray about it, but it's likely it won't be a no. I'm comfortable over here. My whole family lives on the West Coast. The people that I'm closest to, my sister, my parents, my aunts and uncles, my nieces and nephews, my cousins, they all live on the West Coast, from Washington to Oregon and parts of California. And so the idea of me moving everything to somewhere where I know virtually nobody, it was kind of intimidating, if I'm going to be honest. So when he said that, I said, I'm good. And he did what he's done for a lot of people, which is he said, well, at least come and check it out. Mm-hmm. Just come see what we're doing over here. I'm part of this ministry called Love Squared. And I think that you would really love just what we're doing here, just based on just your experience with ministry and just your experience and love and passion for just stepping the lives of students. So in 2022, I agreed. In 2022, February, I came out here to Franklin and just checked out Love Squares to see what we were doing, to see what y'all were doing over here. And man, when I tell you, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with just what was happening here. Just the conversations that you're having with students, the care that the leaders were putting into not only the students, but also just getting ready for students to arrive. I just fell in love with the entire just process. And so I wound up meeting Joe Katina at one of the groups that we had for Love Squared. And I don't think he remembers that conversation that we had, but what I remember was that he was all in on that conversation that he had with me. Hmm. It was just this idea of like, wow, like you care, you don't even really know me. And yet you're putting this love and care into just who I am. Like you want me to know how much I mean to you and how much value I hold. And that was something that was unique to me. I have people in my life that were speaking truth into my life and were speaking value into me. But for somebody who knows nothing about me to put that level of care into me, I was going, wow, there's something different about here. So that's what ultimately drew me over here. And so I've been here since September.
Very cool. So I never knew that you came here in 2022. did you just stay at Jeremy's house, or what was the deal with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I stayed at Jeremy's house. He had opened up. I can't remember where I stayed. Oh, I stayed in. He's got like a bonus room, so I wound up staying upstairs at his place for about 4 or 5 days, and I wound up just going to groups. I went to Centennial's group that they had, which I think was at Joe's house.
It would have been.
And so I was getting rides from a guy named Basic, who used to be a Love Squared associate.
Yep.
And so he would just drive me around to wherever I wanted to either tour in Nashville or Franklin while he was at work. Or then when he was off work, then we would all just hang out and just explore and
very cool.
Get to know like what he does over here. So it really was pretty sweet.
That is awesome. So like I mentioned earlier, I've known you close to a year now. Did you move here? Was it early September?
So okay. I'm a photographer, a wedding photographer.
Yeah.
Alex, who we all met earlier, he's another Love Squared associate. He got here in August. Technically, the program, it starts in August 1st. For me, it was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Before I even knew that I was going to be moving out here for sure, I had signed on tons of contracts throughout the entire summer for wedding contracts.
Okay.
So I was doing weddings pretty much every weekend all the way up until August 31st.
Okay.
And so I've
been that money.
That's right. Getting that money, getting that bag, you know? And I wound up the craziest thing ever. Whenever I tell people this, they go, are you serious? I know it's crazy. But the next day I had a wedding August 31st. And then the very next day packed up and drove and road tripped across the country.
Wow.
Just crazy.
And I remember the moment I met you because we were, I was at the house that you live in now, and we were having our 19th annual fantasy football draft.
Fantasy football, that's right.
Right in the middle. You came right in the middle of the draft, and I felt for you because I was like, dang, he's walking in this room. We're all, no offense, but we don't care about what's going on at the front door. We're worried about the fantasy draft. But I remember you walking in. I was like, oh, this guy looks cool. I'm excited to get to know him after the draft. So,
and I remember just being overstimulated with all the people.
Sure.
There were so many people there.
Yeah.
It was awesome because I knew walking in, once again, like I said about Joe, like the rest of the uncles and everybody else that was there, was it's the same like, what's up, Andrew?
Yeah.
And even if y'all were locked in on fantasy football, there was still that love, at least in care, to acknowledge my existence.
Yeah.
And a sense of like, man, like I know for a fact that I'm going to receive a lot of love and care here when I'm living here. And I have.
I remember too, Jeremy had come. He was there for most of the draft because he knew you were going to be there. And he asked us all, I don't remember. He was like, guys, when Andrew walks in, was it like your birthday or something?
Nah,
or
it was, I can't remember what it was.
I don't know. He made us like, he didn't make us. He's like, can we do a chant or whatever? It's so Jeremy. But I remember we were all excited and you walked in with your parents. And that was the start of your Love Squared associate journey.
Yeah.
So that was early September. What have you been doing since you moved here?
Yeah. So I, in Oregon, I was working, doing several different things beyond just wedding photography. I was volunteering at my church as a high school leader. And so that's part of my story of why I'm even doing what I'm doing over here. But I was also working at Costco. I work in the bakery. And so now when I moved over here, what was just, again, just a total God thing was I was able to transfer to the Costco over here. Mm-hmm. And so one of the other jobs that I do along with Love Squared is working at Costco. Yeah. And so it was a smooth transition for me. Like I was able to, instead of trying to pick up something new, I was able to just pick up right where I left off pretty much other than just a new environment, right? And I was able to do the stuff that I already know how to do. And so I'm connected with Costco. I'm still doing stuff with Love Squared, of course. And what I'm trying to get back into is wedding photography again. Mm. I've been starting my business back up. Moving a business to a new space is where nobody knows you. It's a lot of work trying to get your name out there because people already have their own ideas of what you might be because you're the new guy.
Yeah.
And so trying to kind of integrate yourself into the new space where people don't know you, it's a lot of work. But
totally,
I'll tell you, I really, that's my, beyond just serving students and stepping lives of students, if I could take pictures for the rest of my life, I would do it. I love it so much.
That's awesome. Well, people who are listening can't see this, but I can see that you are wearing a t-shirt that says Centennial versus Everyone. And I am a Centennial High School alumni. I graduated over 10 years ago now, which is crazy to think. But I don't know if this makes me weird, but like I really loved my high school years. I loved my high school. I had a lot of pride in going to Centennial, and I cared a lot about just the Centennial High community and my classmates and teachers and coaches and all that. And so I'm not involved in any way with the school now, but I am really grateful that Love Square does have a presence at the high school that I went to and is pouring into kids that grew up in the same neighborhoods as I did and come from a similar background to me. I want to ask, so are you with the Centennial group every week? Maybe you can explain to the people, because people ask me this on the road all the time, like, what are you guys doing in the high schools? What high schools are you in? What does the structure look like? Maybe talk about kind of what that all entails.
Of course. So as y'all probably heard from Alex, he is with Centennial and Independence. Now, what that actually looks like, we have certain groups on a week-to-week basis where we gather together and have not only just pizza, wings, drinks, and just fellowship.
Just going to interrupt you. Centennial and Independence are high schools here in Franklin.
Yes, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah.
And so while they, even though on a week-to-week basis, they have all those things, there's also a DBS or a Bible study that we dig into on a weekly basis. And so Centennial is one of those schools where I am essentially going to be meeting on a week-to-week basis every Monday night from about 6 o'clock to about 8:30, 9 o'clock p.m., and I'm going and just basically having the same style of just grabbing pizza and wings, fellowship, laughter, joy, catching up with students, and just stepping in their lives when they need it.
Yeah.
And then also digging into the Word of God and just figuring out how do we take what we're learning from the Word and apply it in our life in a leadership context.
Mm-hmm.
And so every week I go to group on Monday at Jeremy's house, and we just love each other, and it's great. Beyond that, Tuesday afternoons, myself, Alex, Jeremy, and a few others, we go to Centennial High School and go to the football field and connect with students there as well. Yeah. They have football practices going on. There's typically track practices at this time, although I think track is now done. But track practices and lacrosse practices, like there's so many opportunities to connect with so many different students by just simply stepping into their world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy for us to say, hey, like come to our group on Monday nights, but it's another factor. There's another layer too when it comes to just contact work, which is just simply connecting and stepping in the lives of people. Taking that next step is actually showing up in their world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's easier to say, man, y'all should come to the group because we got pizza and wings, we got fellowship. But for me to say, you know what? No, I'm going to come to your world, and I'm going to actually meet you where you're at. That's the next step when it comes to discipleship that has been missing. And so I get a chance to be a part of that along with Alex and Jeremy and a bunch of other people. Of just, it's a joy.
Yeah. I think when I think about what you guys do, part of it to me, like, there is an intimidating aspect of it. Because like you said, it's one thing to say, yeah, we're having a Bible study, we're going to have food, and we're going to talk and read scripture or whatever. Come and see us. That in itself, I know that takes a lot of work to do. But there's another, in my the way I see it, there's another step of faith that it takes to actually go to a track practice and just show up and see what's going to happen. And like, I know that for Katina Ministries, our mission statement is to invite people into spiritual family through songs and through stories. And the songs part is kind of that self-explanatory, but stories are really an important part of our mission and our ministry in that, we just tell people our own stories and let God, show up through those things. And I have to imagine there's an element of that when you're going to a high school, you're meeting kids that they don't know who you are. You don't know who they are. A lot of times, beyond the, hey, how's it going? I'm Andrew. The next thing you do is you start telling a story, whether you're being intentional about it or not, you're telling them who you are, why you're there. I'm curious, like, your own personal story, which I don't know very much of. But I'm curious, like, have you seen in since September or even before that in your ministry with youth, how does your story kind of fit into the ministry work that you do?
That's a great question. I'll tell you, it took a long time for me to be able to be comfortable to share my testimony, to be comfortable to share my story with people. And by the grace of God, he just continued to just chip away, just continue to work in my life. Part of my desire to be in ministry goes all the way back to the very beginning of my life. I was adopted, and what was so beautiful about it was that God gave me a chance to have the life that I never would have had I not been adopted at birth. I was only about 2 weeks old when I was adopted. And while that's such a beautiful thing, the flip side of it is, like, there's still a lot of hardships and grief that's tied to it. My biological mother, she was pregnant with me at 18 years old. My biological father, he was 25 when he got my mother pregnant, and then he took off after he found out that she was pregnant. And so my mother at 19 gave birth to me, and not really having a plan for what to do with me, she was financially not able to take care of me. She was not in a space where she was able to raise me. And so she knew right away that foster care was the right decision for myself. And so I wound up going to foster care, and then these amazing people who adopted me now, who are my parents, they have just continued to pour love and into my life from when I was born all the way up into even today. And so much of my story is tied to just identity and not feeling like I was enough, not feeling like I was cared for, not feeling like I was seen or valued. And I just knew growing up, outside of people like my parents, I just knew growing up that having somebody that is a leader that's not connected to your family, not connected to people that in the back of your mind, whether it's true or not, in the back of your mind, you think, oh, well, they have to say that. Like, they have to say I love you because they're your parents, you know. To have people like leaders at church or leaders at schools or leaders outside of the capacity that you, the time that you spend the most time with, or the place that you spend the most time with, I just knew having leaders that would step into your world, step into your life, and show that they care about you and love you, that was something that I didn't have until later on in my years in high school. And then when I had that leader that spoke truth into my life and said, hey, I just want everybody to know that Andrew is seen and he is loved and he is cared for and he is valued, that completely shifted my life. It shifted the way I viewed my relationship with Jesus. It completely shifted the way that I viewed myself in terms of I didn't have to wear multiple hats to try and fit in because I was searching to try and feel like a sense of fulfillment. And once I realized that, oh, like I do have value and that I do have meaning and that my experiences, they don't define me. Like my biological parents kind of quitting or giving up or whatever words you want to use, like those choices that they made, that doesn't define me either.
Mm.
Once I learned that truth, it completely shifted my life. And so to this day, even while I'm here, I want students to know that they're loved and they're cared for and they're seen and they're valued. Because every student, 100% of students have a story.
Yeah.
You know, and the idea that, well, you know, so and such, he's got everything. He seems like he's got everything put together. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has their own story. Everybody has their own battle. And so for me, I kind of took my experience and didn't allow it to shape who I am, but it did give me a lens to understand people. And so from that experience that I had, I just praise God every single day. I always apologize to people, which I probably shouldn't be, but I always apologize to people for just constantly thanking them and saying how thankful I am for them.
Hmm.
Because I really don't believe I would be here without God just putting different people in my life to help guide me in the way that I'm where I'm at right now.
That's beautiful, bro. I want to ask you this. So you're 26, you said?
26.
Okay, I'm 28. I'm almost 29. And recently, probably over the last year or two, I've been coming to a place of acceptance where I'm realizing that, like, high school kids today see me as an old guy.
Just crazy.
And they're kind of right, because I have younger cousins who are still in high school. And I guess I feel like their lives today are significantly different now than my life was when I was in high school. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I wouldn't have said that, because I feel like, I don't know, life just changes, the world changes, and now I'm sounding like those old people that I heard when I was in high school. It was back in my day.
I wasn't going to say it,
but I guess I'm realizing that now I'm not a young person. At least I'm not a young adult anymore. And there are certain parts of just what it means to be a teenager today that I can't understand unless I go into their world and see it for myself. And I would consider you much more of an expert on that than me. I'm curious, like, the youth of today, high school kids of today, I guess I'm assuming they're still called Gen Z, or
I think Gen Z.
Okay.
Y'all can correct us if we're wrong.
Whatever they're called. Yeah. Kids who were born in the 2000s. What are the things that they're facing today? Maybe they're not that different from what I was facing, but like, what kind of, you don't have to share any crazy details, but like, what are the sort of stories that you're hearing today from the students that you work with?
Man, social pressure is a real thing for these kids. There's parts of my generation that we struggle with it too, of just this idea of you have to be somebody to try and fit in. You don't want to offend anybody. There's a ton of social pressure that students face today. And so it really shapes their identity. They allow it to shape their identity. I think the enemy, he uses those things that of like, you have to be somebody for everybody, if that makes any sense. And so there's a ton of social pressure to try and either fit in. There's a ton of social pressure to either feel like you can be, like you got to be your best self, your true self, in a sense of like the self-integrity movement, this idea of like you have to be your full self, your best self, the person that you think everybody wants you to be.
Mm.
And it's a lot of pressure for these students. You see depression levels super high, you see anxiety levels super high, and a lot of it is tied to just the use of just social media, for example.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of pressure to try and be somebody. You got to put out the best picture that you have to post online. You got to wear the best clothes when you go to school. So that way you can show people like what you have. You got to have the best car, the nicest car. You got to have the nicest jewelry, whatever you can name it. But there's a ton of social pressure to be somebody that either you aren't, or to be somebody that you think people want you to be. And so there's a ton of, I just see it a lot.
Yeah. I can imagine. And it makes sense to me. Like, what I hear from you is one of the things that pops in my head when I hear about that is identity crisis. And like you were saying earlier, that's something you're familiar with and something you struggled with. Like, I think about my youth. And I think identity for a young person, a teenager, it's always a struggle because there comes a time in everyone's life where you have to start thinking about, okay, who am I? And who am I to my parents? And who am I to my friends? And who am I to my teachers or whatever? Identity is a struggle we all have to go through. And it's a continuous thing that you have to fight for, I think. But when you talk about social media, one thing that I think is different now than it was when I was a kid was that social media to me was a way to express your identity. It was, hey, I'm Josh and this is who I am. Like, I don't know how to articulate it, but it was an expression of your identity. I see kids today now where their social media is their identity.
Yeah.
It's absolutely not just an expression. It's my Instagram profile is, that's like just as much me as you and I are sitting across from each other right now. Am I making sense?
No, you are. I mean, I completely agree. I mean, a lot of times that's why you see churches or you see just individuals doing a social media fast, because they are realizing, oh shoot, like this is actually part of me. Like this isn't, you know, this isn't something that I go to do. This is part of me. And so you see a lot of students or just people pulling back from social media for a break.
Well, and the danger I think I see in that, I don't know if like your social media being your identity is inherently bad, but my instinct says it's probably not healthy. But I think what's really dangerous about it is how easy it is to lie on social media, and how easy it is to be lied to on social media. And when your TikTok or your Instagram is the number one front-facing platform that you have, like you can make it, these kids are good at making it look like whatever they want it to. And they're also, as good as they are at that, so are their friends. So to me, what social media in some ways has contributed to for young people is the death of the truth. And, you know, the Bible, Jesus said, the truth will set you free. Mm-hmm. And people go through these fasts. They say they feel bondage and chains from these apps, which can be used for good and can be used for evil. I have to, in my limited time that I spent thinking about it, I have to think that a lot of that bondage comes from the absence of the truth. Mm. And there's not freedom if there's not truth. And I think my hope is for young people today who have people like you in their lives is that I know you are someone who gives them the truth and tells them this is who you are because this is who God says you are. Mm. This is who your creator, your father in heaven says that you are. And those are timeless truths. Things that no matter what your Instagram follower account is, that stays the same. That stays true. Do you feel like, what are the lies that kids are believing today because of social media?
That's a bit, so you hit so many points home.
Yeah, sorry.
Don't be sorry. I'll tell you, I find that a lot of students believe the lie that they have to put out their A grade self, if that makes any sense. Like they have to put out the idea that they have everything put together.
Sure.
You know, they have to put out the best, like I was saying earlier, like the best clothes, got to have the best hair, got to have the best filter, whatever it may be. Like they have this idea that they have to, this lie that they have to be their best self when they go online or when they post online or whatever it may be. There's another lie that I see a lot beyond just the, like, you have to be your best self, is the lie that, and it's actually kind of the inverse of what I was saying, but the idea that everyone else has everything put together.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So it's not only that you have to put everything, you have to have everything put together, but everybody else outside of you has everything put together.
Right.
And you are just a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why those two are kind of tied together, if you understand what I'm saying. And so
totally,
there's a lot of lies that are being shared internally about students, you know, they're saying these lies to themselves. I would say the enemy is whispering in their ear that they have to be somebody that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shapes a lot of how they view themselves. It shapes a lot how they view other people. It shapes a lot how they think other people think of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a convoluted mess that really just affects how the students are doing with not only their emotional self, but honestly how they think God sees them too.
Yeah. I think for me, I think I can even fall victim to this, and especially the part where you said where it looks like everyone else is doing so great.
Mm.
Because my life is not sunshine and rainbows all the time, just like everyone's life is not like that. But it can be easy to forget that. And I find that I have, you know, with my wife and a handful of family and friends that I have, that I have a level of honesty that I can share with them struggles that I'm facing or things that aren't going that great. And to me, there's a burden that's lifted when I'm able to share that. And at the same time, to me, there's a burden that lifts on me when I hear them share their struggles with me, because then I don't feel so alone.
Mm.
I feel like, well, this is someone who I love and admire, and I think I respect them, and they're dealing with some stuff that I didn't know other people dealt with. I thought I was the only one. I think that's a lie that the enemy tells us, is you're the only person who struggles
right,
with this.
Right.
You're so messed up. You're so far beyond where everyone else is. Like, you've got to deal with this on your own. That's a lie. The truth is that we don't have to deal with anything on our own. And I think that social media is really good at telling that lie, is that you're alone in this struggle or this addiction or this depression or this whatever it is, your relationship's not going the way that everyone else's relationship is going. And so I say that to communicate, I think it's important that everyone has people in their lives that they can be honest with, and also people in their lives who are honest to them, if that makes sense. And I'm not saying you got to share your story with everybody, but you should find somebody. You got to tell somebody, and you have to, there's something in your spirit, I think, that I think God intended it this way, that we're supposed to share our burdens with our neighbor and share their, we're supposed to help them carry theirs as well. That makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, that's biblical. That comes straight from the Bible. It's leaning on other people as well, but then also being able to carry your own burdens. I believe it's in 2 Thessalonians, but I'll tell you, there's something that's so freeing when you, like what you were saying earlier, the truth shall set you free. There's something so freeing, not only just emotionally and spiritually, but even physically. Like when you confess something, like I can think of times in my own life where I've failed or I've hidden or ran. And when I eventually confess, there's something that happens to my shoulders almost. It's like I feel like a light burden or something, you know? Yeah. And you just feel more free. Like you can kind of run. There's no anchors tied to your ankles or anything like that. And so going back to what you were saying earlier about social media, you know, there's when somebody sees, you know, somebody posts something that's just really authentic, something that's really raw and real, and it's not an attention grabber. It's something that's, they're going, hey, this is a part of my story. This is a part of the struggles that I've walked through. And you see the reception that it gets.
Yeah.
I think it's not just because people are going, wow, I'm so proud of you for sharing. I think it's even deeper than that. I think it's that people are finally feeling like what you were just saying. Wow, I'm not the only one that struggles with this.
Yeah.
You know, there's something that comes with the continuity of fellowship when it comes to we're being transparent with each other.
Totally. I had something just came to my mind while you were talking. Have you ever heard of the millennial pause?
No.
Okay. So, cause we were talking, are these kids Gen Z or whatever? I've always thought that I was a millennial. Do you call yourself a millennial or Gen Z or?
It's depends on who you ask.
Okay.
Some people, they say I'm Gen Z. Some people say I'm millennial. I think I'm Gen Z.
We're kind of both right on the corner. So, right. But you feel it like you're Gen Z.
So.
Yeah. So, I heard about this thing called the millennial pause, and it's like whenever you're recording a selfie video, they say, and I've noticed because I myself do this, that a millennial presses record and pauses before they start speaking. Gen Z kids, they, as soon as they press record, they start to speak. And you can, if next time you're on, I don't know if you're on social media right now, but next time you're on, you'll notice like younger people, they'll just start going. Sometimes their first word is actually cut off from the recording. And apparently it's because millennials, they grew up with technology where you'd press record and the video doesn't actually start recording until like a half second after you press the button.
Yep, yep.
It's a normal thing. So I notice it now when I watch, because I never knew that I did it until I went back and watched my own videos. I do pause for like a half second. I'm just staring at the camera and then I start talking. But then I see like my younger cousins who they'll post on social media and they don't have that little pause. And it's because of the technology that they grew up with compared to what I grew up with.
Right. I mean, they're just so used to iPhones. I mean, I can think of when I was in high school, even where kindergartners are having iPhones and iPads. I'm going, what?
Yeah.
That was not something I grew up with. I mean, I grew up with technology, but not that.
Right. My little nephew, Josiah, who's about to turn 2, he has his own iPad. And that's what his parents call it, but really it's an Etch-a-Sketch. Yeah. And so they tell Josiah, get your iPad. And so I don't know when the age is that it's supposed to be okay to give kids those kind of things, but that's a challenge I'm sure parents all over the country face every day. And that's a challenge parents 20 years ago didn't have to think about. When do I give my kid an iPad? Or
truly. Times really have changed. I was actually just talking to a coworker at Costco about how I remember when, I'm sorry, mom and dad ahead of time about this, but we'd have arguments over who's been texting, because, you know, text messages were not unlimited text messages. You get charged by the text. Uh-huh. And so it'd be who's been texting this 6 text messages, like this bill is super high.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's my Wi-Fi is not connecting fast enough. Right. Totally. It's like times have changed so much.
Yeah. Let me ask you about this. What's it like working at a grocery store? That I have a friend in high school college, like her happy place was grocery stores.
Really?
Yeah. She something about it. She would like go to Publix or to just to hang out. And like, there was a relaxing thing about it to her. I don't know if that's your experience at all, but what's it like? I guess Costco's even more than a grocery store. It's what do you guys call yourself?
It's like warehouse.
Wholesale.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably wholesale. It's probably the most accurate thing to call it.
I've always heard Costco's one of like the best companies to work for.
It truly is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
What makes it so great?
I mean, it's of course, no place is perfect, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, beyond just the pay, it's pretty incredible considering the work that I'm actually doing.
Okay.
Like I work in the bakery still. So the money that I'm making for just making cookies and breads, it's kind of ridiculous if you think about it.
My mom told me you introduced yourself to her as the muffin man. I'm the muffin man.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, the muffin man. Yeah. I mean, it's fun. Uh-huh. I mean, they take good care of us, good benefits, time and half pay on Sundays. If you want decent hours, if you want great hours, they will give it to you. Wow. If you want to work your way up the ladder and try and be a supervisor to a manager to a AGM, like you have unlimited opportunities to do that. So they just have great career opportunities there. So once it's tough to get the job at first because you really have to know somebody to be able to get in.
It's pretty competitive.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But then once you're in, man, the sky truly is the limit. I know it's kind of a cliche, but there's just so many opportunities for you to work your way up the ladder. That's not my desire right now.
Yeah.
But I will say I do enjoy working there. I think the thing that gives me the most life has been just the conversations that I've been able to have with coworkers.
Yeah.
People who have different beliefs. Like I love Jesus, and there's a lot of people who I work with that don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or are atheists, or people who are Mormons, or people who are Catholic. Like there's different backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, different religious backgrounds. And so just the opportunities to have conversations with people has been pretty sweet. I mean, I've developed some pretty good friendships with people back in Oregon who were similar situations where, man, I don't have a relationship with Jesus. And so to be able to have friendships and connections with people who have different backgrounds has been such a blessing for me. It's pushed me in my own faith too.
Yeah. So climbing the ladder in Costco is not necessarily the dream right now.
Not necessarily.
I ask this to a lot of people, especially first-time guests, because it's something I'm interested in a lot and I find myself inspired by hearing other people talk about this. I know you've mentioned your desire to take more photographs. But when you, at this point in your life right now, if you could tell me, it can be really big and broad or maybe something specific, but what is the thing that you're dreaming about right now? What's that thing that gets you up in the morning and you're praying for, hoping for? What is that?
My big dream is that I have, within the next few years, I have a house, I'm married, but beyond that, I want to be able to be a host for students, be a host, one of those houses where it's always welcome for not just students, I know I said students earlier, but for people. I would love to be able to, one of the reasons why Costco is not a big desire for me in terms of working my way up the ladder is that with photography, I can kind of set my own schedule.
Right.
And so with that space, I can kind of spend more time with family. I can spend more time with students. I can kind of shape my schedule based on what I want it to be rather than what Costco wants it to be, for example.
Yeah.
I just really want to be able to have a place to where I can call it home and have a place where I can open it up for people. That's been my vision for the last couple years. I think that I'm close to accomplishing that vision soon. My photography business is slowly starting to pick up right now. People are starting to send in inquiries towards my way.
That's great.
And so it's kind of exciting because yeah. I'm starting to slowly get integrated into the community. And so it's exciting to see like, oh man, like my vision, or at least my goal, my dream, my hopes are slowly coming to fruition, or at least in the way that I think it might. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of exciting. I would love to have a family, you know, and be married with kids and have a home. I don't get asked that question a lot.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it gets me excited, yeah. You know, when I think about it, of just, you know, where I came from at the very beginning of, you know, I didn't really have a family at that point. To now I'm over here and God's kind of given me these opportunities to say, hey, like I still haven't forgotten about you. Wow. You know, you dream big. And even just that verse that I just sit with recently is a lot of people have heard it. It's Philippians 4:6, where it just says, don't be anxious about anything, but in all things by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Mm-hmm. Just this idea of, man, I don't have to worry about the future, but I can also understand that when I present those requests to God, he wants to hear me, mm-hmm. and he wants to honor those dreams and those requests and things that I have. Like, he wants me to have those visions. And so it's just exciting to know that there's opportunities in the future that are coming. And so it's exciting just to think about. And that's what gets me up every day is just thinking like, man, I have a chance to be able to continue to push forward and continue to achieve those goals.
That's beautiful, man. I'm excited for you and I'm thankful for you. Last question. I thought I would talk to you about this more, but I didn't. Do you see yourself in Tennessee long term, or do you like Tennessee? Are you like, I got to get back to the Pacific Northwest? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been spending a long time, and by a long time, I mean maybe for the last three to four months, of just processing, hey, what does it look like? What does the future look like for me? To start off, I would love to be here long term.
Hmm.
To break it down a little bit deeper, it's not the easiest thing to say entirely. My family, like I said earlier, they're all on the West Coast. My nieces and nephews that I'm very close with, they're all on the West Coast. Some of my best friends, not all of them, but some of my best friends, they're all on the West Coast. Uh-huh. All the people that, the things and the people that I've kind of built up over there is over there.
Those are your roots.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so if I'm being honest, it's kind of scary just to think about me not being near them.
Sure.
Thankfully, based on, you know, due to technology, like what we were talking about, like I can FaceTime them, yeah. I call them like I do. But it's not the same, you know what I mean?
Totally.
So I would love to be here long term. I love the community here. I love we get on average 50 more days of sunshine.
There you go.
You know, compared to Oregon. But beyond just the practical stuff, I really do sense like God's wanting me to pour into the community here. I really do feel like he's kind of helping me with the photography business kind of starting to pick up. I feel like he's kind of tapping me on the shoulder and saying, hey, like, this is it right here, you know. So I'm just kind of going to try and stay honorable to him and continue to pray, continue to talk to people like what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
About, because I think the more I talk about it, the easier it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And I just trust that he's got the rest of it taken care of.
Yeah. Well, selfishly, I would love for you to stay here.
I appreciate it.
I always, in this time of year, in like April and May, I'm always curious for people who didn't grow up in the South or spend a lot of time here. Had you had experience with tornadoes before?
No.
Were those hard for you? Because I know for some people, it's really hard, which I understand. I'm curious, what was your experience when we had some of those tornadoes?
We have some tornadoes in Oregon, but okay. It's not what it is over here.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, Alex, ahead of time for sharing this information, but I have to share it. It's just too funny. If you're not, it's one of those situations where if you're not from here and you don't understand, I mean, tornadoes are really bad,
uh-huh.
but if you live in the Franklin area, I didn't know that y'all don't make it as big of a deal as what I had initially thought it would have actually been.
Uh-huh.
I know that recently, I can't remember what year it was, that a tornado tore through Nashville, I think it was, right?
Yeah, it was 2020. It wasn't that long ago. Really bad ones.
Yeah. But I mean, I didn't realize that y'all pretty much just go back to bed.
Yeah.
When there's a tornado warning. And meanwhile, my first experience with a tornado was I'm hearing this loud siren going off. And I thought that it was like an apocalypse. That's what it sounded like. Uh-huh. I'm going, what is happening right
it's
now?
It's eerie.
It's very eerie. And so I step outside and it's not raining. Uh-huh. It's super warm.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, what is happening? And I hear the siren going off. And the worst thing that I could have done was turn on the news.
Yeah.
At that point. Yeah. And I live basically in downtown Franklin. And the news, they basically said, man, if you're in downtown Franklin, this tornado, it's basically on top of you. So so get your loved ones, tell them that you love them, pray, you know, let them know, and get out as soon as you can. And me and Alex were barricaded in the hallway.
Yeah.
Crawled up in a ball, going, what do we do?
Uh-huh.
Just worried, like sick as a dog, just worried. And we're texting people going, what do we do?
Yeah.
Where do we go? And just so worried. And we can laugh about it now because
it's not fun in the moment.
No, right. So yeah. It's basically, if you live on the West Coast, it's the same. It's equivalent of when somebody were to move to the West Coast for the first time and we get the fires.
Uh-huh.
And the fires were terrible in California, terrible.
Yeah.
But if you're in Oregon, for example, a lot of it doesn't hit it as heavy or as often. And so a lot of people, it's like, hey, look, this happens every year. Like, it's going to be all right. Like, you're going to be all right. And so for my experience, again, I know it's not the same for everybody, but for my experience, it was terrifying. Yeah. I was worried and I don't think I slept until about 2 or 3 a.m.
I get it. I feel like when you grow up here and you've been through enough tornado seasons, you get to the point where it's like, there's really nothing I can do anyways. Yeah. Like if the tornado runs through my house, I'm not going to stop it.
Truly.
So the only time now for me when I get nervous is, and I don't know if this is true or not, but maybe when I was a kid growing up and there was tornadoes coming through this town and I was probably scared, somebody told me that you really don't need to worry until it starts hailing. Have you ever heard this?
I've never heard that.
So the hail is like, a lot of people don't know this, hail and tornadoes go hand in hand. So if there's a tornado literally above you, it will start hailing. And so if it's really windy and even rainy and stormy or whatever, but there's no hail, you're probably, I don't want to give out advice, but I'll say for me, if there's no hail, I'm not taking cover. So when it starts hailing, then I start getting a little nervous, but even still, it's like, okay, this is up to God. I don't have anything I can't control the weather. So
that's good to know.
Yeah. We're almost out of the woods. I think, I don't know when our tornado season officially ends, but I'm sure that's a big adjustment. I can imagine that's an adjustment for people who don't grow up here. And you'll get used to it. Next year will be easier.
Yeah, beyond that, I mean, I really have loved my time here.
Yeah.
People are really friendly. The whole Southern hospitality is, I didn't really think that it was a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew it was a real thing, but I didn't realize I didn't realize the depth of it until I actually moved here. Mm-hmm. And so people are so friendly. I'm used to, you know, in Oregon or just the West Coast, I'm used to just mind your own business. You know, when you're walking on the sidewalk, you don't wave. You don't say, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Nothing. You just keep to yourself and keep it pushing. Uh-huh. And if somebody does say, hey, how are you doing? You know, it's kind of like, why are they talking to me? Like, yeah. What's your deal?
You're going to rob me?
That's right. And so now I'm even just when you're, you know, I've learned some of the cadences of what y'all do over here. Of even when you're walking down the street and somebody drives by, you give them a short wave.
Right.
It's little things like that that I just didn't realize just the depth of which, you know, what Southern hospitality actually is. Sure. Until I moved here. And so, just yeah, people are just so generous. I guess I'm not used to it.
Yeah.
You know? So I have enjoyed it a lot. And mm-hmm. I really have loved it here. Mm-hmm.
That comes up all the time. It's on these shows when I have someone who's not from the South, and every time I'm thankful for it because I feel like I probably don't appreciate it the way that I definitely don't appreciate it the way that you do, just because it's like I don't really notice it. I notice it when I notice it because I have these neighbors across the street who don't wave to me when I leave the house. I'm like, what's their problem? But they're probably just from Oregon or uh-huh. something. But, oh, man. Well, I really appreciate your time coming to talk with me today, Andrew. And I think I want you to know I'm really encouraged by just things you shared with me. And I'm encouraged to know that there's people like you out there who are stepping into young people's lives every day and making an impact for the next generation and generations to come. So Love Squared is blessed by you. I want you to know that the Katina family is blessed by you. I'm in agreement with you that it's totally God that brought us together, and everything God does is good. And that's what I feel about our relationship with you. So I love you, man, and I'm thankful for you, and I'm really excited for the future for you.
Well, thank you. That means a lot. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. Well, you're welcome back anytime. To those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with more episodes soon. Have a great day.